Episode 105 of the Michael Anthony Show, and we are back. I would take this time to explain the four-week-long absenteeism from the airways, but I don't think it's any of your fucking business.
The sinking sand of despair, the smell of dread in the air. I'm head to toe in my own fear. I'm going to die, no need to cry.
It's not your business because the world doesn't exist anymore. Nothing matters. This is going on for too long, to the point in which our existence is now essentially pointless. Me and a good friend 4 days ago planned an activity around both purchasing laptop stands because Harvey Norman is still open. We took it seriously. There's people appearing in my dreams now that have absolutely no right to be there because isolation has given us too much time to think, too much time to mull over the past. And hourly, in fact, every 10 minutes, I'm getting a flashback of humiliation and embarrassment that are resulting in me grunting, moaning, punching walls. Just little small things, such as the fact that when I was 17, I had my name inscripted on my sports boots. Why was I getting them customized? I'm in the shower, I'm conditioning my hair, and I'm screaming because I'm thinking about me with a pair of predators with my name on them. Teammates are thinking, we know who you are. We sit beside you in maths. The teacher literally hand wrote out your name on the notice board. Winger number 2, Michael Anthony, in a pool of 6 out of shape wingers. Why are they customized? Why did I become so emotionally involved in the 2009 X Factor? The one with Joe McKeldry, Jamie Archer, Lloyd Daniels, Stacey Solomon, I still know their names. Why did I do that? Why would I use it as social currency, waiting on MSN for victims of my insecurity to come online? Literally sitting there like an airplane traffic controller, yeah? We got Jennifer online, we got Amy. For no reason other than just dropping a comment like, how's you? To ultimately get a response, good, good, you. And then holding on to a hope for 24 hours that they start the conversation the next day. And if they don't, you never speak to them again until you see them in your 20s. You remember it. They probably don't. So you act emotionally violent towards them. Why did I do that? Any scenario that occurred during my college years, I now cannot think about. Due to the fact that our minds are idle. They can't handle them now. We don't have the distraction of the day-to-day rigmarole to justify these behaviours. I chose the wrong course. I'd nobody to blame but myself, because all the pieces of advice I got from people in positions of authority, they told me, you're not going to be fulfilled doing a course that revolves around business, law, supply chains. What do they even mean? So I couldn't blame myself because I'm the one who believed that these courses are the ones that gave you money down the line and therefore status and therefore would make me feel good about myself. So I overcompensated by going in to UCD, dressing like Kurt Cobain, ruining people's college experience. People who I do truly, truly dislike. In fact, I've never been around people so consistently in which hatred would just exuberate. But leave it out. Don't go in and literally become a parody of what you wanted to be. Not showing up to group projects, dressing like Razorlight, mistreating women that you liked because you thought it was cool, enjoying rumors of your sexuality amongst other students. The only good thing that came out of that period was the fact that I created a football team of fellow outlaws, bangers. We were supposed to get people in from that college to play for the team, but they were all too square, so I got numerous female student numbers and brought in a load of complete bohemians. We traveled to Newcastle. We wore suits to the airport. I developed a relationship with a coach of a pretty poor Newcastle side called Nigel Reeves. If you are listening, if you are even alive, how are you, Nige? We went over twice as a group of 18-year-olds. We stayed in a hotel. I used to put letters under the door the night before the game to explain to people why or why they were not playing. First time we went over, we lost 7-1. They completely outclassed us. The second time I came over with an approved side, I convinced a few more boys to join, a few more good men who felt out of touch with their student life. And we lost 1-0 to a very contentious penalty decision. But even with that kind of behaviour, I believe I was overcompensating. That was to make up for the fact that the first time I began to play football, the sport I wanted to play, as opposed to the violent, irrational sport that is rugby union. Ridiculous game, by the way. I was very angry at the fact that I didn't have the social circumstances to allow me to play young. So I joined a team at 15, and after a number of weeks, butt heads with the gaffer over tactical philosophies, which I had no right to do looking back. He kicked me off the team, and me, thinking I was one of the leaders in the dressing room, walked out of that session on a cold Milltown night with nobody backing me up, a la Roy Keane's Saipan. Now, a few boys say they did back me up when I left, but I don't believe them. And that's the first time they ever smelt betrayal. I am sorry that we haven't been around for the last few weeks, because I do believe we've developed a relationship with the people listening to this show in which we rely on each other. And I do appreciate the abuse that has come due to us being nowhere to be seen. So I view it as a sign of love, a sign of care. That's not to say that the recent right-wing abuse I'm getting from Tommy Robinson supporters on a daily basis is acceptable. The last of which I was told by a Liverpudlian named Howard, if he ever sees me, he's going to knock my fucking lights out. So to all you guys, you Tommy Robinson fans who are attempting to intimidate me on a daily basis, what I will say is, take me on, you bastards! And I'll say that until you do ever manage to identify me or meet me face to face, which I don't think will happen soon due to lockdown and also due to the fact that anger passes. But if this does hold up, the abuse continues, and I do ever meet one of you and have to defend myself, I will apologize, and if you continue to express violence, I will probably sue. Because that's the type of guy I am. That's how the system works. In fact, the relationship between the societal classes and the law is fascinating. The most likely to ring the guards for a skirmish are the elite. People who see somebody walk by their recently groomed front garden and ring the police to literally describe somebody walking down the street. But then they act like victims and express surprise and curiosity when they get investigated for the biggest crimes, leading to complete disparity of resources nationwide, such as tax evasion. Then you get below that, the middle class, the people who have a minor relationship with both parties. And let's say you went to a particularly posh school for an away game of a sport and you bit one of them, or you decided to put your studs in one of their face and they threaten you with legal action. You're laughing. You're nearly putting on an accent. Yeah, fucking, all you're going to do, you're going to show me, are you? But then if you find yourself in a situation with a Tommy Robinson fan or at a festival, the accent changes, they come at you. See you in fucking court, mate. Yeah, don't fucking touch me. But what I find most fascinating is, who do they sue? Because I know they moan about the bankers and the accountants and about how they get the unfair side of the stick. But what is the limit of contacting the guards for those people who are so willing to get violent, to get scary? There is none. So the guards close in on them, and then they become rats. And there is nothing more fascinating or funny, really, than the life of a working class rat. Because for me, it completely sums up the problems we have in this world. They've nowhere to turn. We can't get confessions out of the guys at the top because they're too well legally protected. The middle class are fucking irrelevant. No one gives a shit about you. You work for the guys above you, furthering the problem of the guys below you. You were the people who were used basically to create this disparity. So what we actually managed to do is have them turn on each other, turn our backs when they murder each other, and put them under pressure to sell each other out and become ostracized exiles within their own community. And we go again. Brilliant characters, working class rats. Love them. The biggest victims in our society, for me. Been keen to touch on the negatives, especially, like, we're 10 months in now. There's a good chance our lives will never be the same again. If you were fat as a child, after lockdown, it doesn't matter, you won't be known as the fat guy anymore. Whatever you achieved goes out the window. Whatever you didn't achieve becomes irrelevant. Pre-lockdown friendships, pre-lockdown relationships take on an entirely new narrative. This is literally changing the world. There is the odd good thing coming out of this. And that is the damage to the economy. Because although it will result in unemployment, people not being able to pay for goods or services, essentially, it means that places like Brown Thomas, that I was recently dragged into because a friend wanted a Christmas shop, and I saw a Hoover that cost €850, a month's rent for somebody living in a pretty nice pad. There was like people punching each other in the face to get a smeg. I'm talking toasters and kettles. Because they're probably been used on Instagram by some absolute fuckwit wastes of breath. And they're now popular. And we care what fridge we have. Back in the day when I was a kid, you used to get these miniature cars, literal fucking Fisher-Price red and yellow things, and they'd go into walls and you'd get injured and they were made of plastic. It was a BMW one I saw in this shop. So we want these kids who are 5 and 6 to automatically be aware that these major German car manufacturers can provide you with something that makes you feel good about yourself and better than other people. There you go, Bill. Happy 4th birthday. Here's a miniature BMW. Bill's already lost in this capitalistic race in which he associates material gain with happiness. So if the economy taking a fucking nosedive means that we see less of that, I don't know if I'm against it. We're talking about how sad it is that bars that provide local entertainment and great times for society as a whole in many situations, we do seem to ignore it. They also completely placate alcoholism and are hubs of violence. But the nightclub scene might never recover from this. Huge positive. Especially in Dublin. Let's look at some of the names of the Irish nightclubs we've been subjected to over the past 2 decades. There was once a place called Bondi Beach. It was on the Keys and then moved to Stillorgan beside a leisureplex. What do you mean Bondi Beach? Shithole off motorway. Sounds like a more apt name. Everly Gardens. Where's the garden though? We're on Harcourt Street. KPMG's across the road. Crystal. What in Turkey? Dandelion. These places being closed down is one of the best things that could happen to Irish society. Again, what do they sell? Luxury. The notion of importance when it comes to money. The expression of false wealth, grey goose vodka, champagne. Because that's how they control us. They control everything. Even with the age of consent. I get it. I understand that anyone under 17 probably shouldn't be given the ability to choose who they screw. But, I mean, your body tells you that you're ready at 12, 13. We don't make Cocker Spaniels wait. We don't make any other animals wait. So what we're doing, in a way, is doubting biology. Because I'm mainly talking about 14-year-old screwing 14-year-old. I don't think we're so morally strong that we care that they're too young to see each other's willy and fanny. No. I think it's control. I think we know that if they start popping out kids before they've completed the system we set up, which is schooling and college, they might not be financially viable to look after that child. We're valuing capitalism ahead of your ovaries, your penis, your testicles, your womb. We have deleted the notion of us being human beings. And we used to use religion, but now we use money. We use online medias. We use Instagram, Facebook, Twitter to brainwash each other into these wild beliefs. And let's also not ignore the fact that double dates aren't occurring right now. I don't know if any of you have taken the time to witness a double date before, but I've never seen one in which all 4 members shouldn't be instantly shot. 2 dudes who are meeting up because their girlfriends are made. Look at that interaction. Watch it. The only way in which they can ever get themselves out of, one guy turns to the other and goes, "Do you do coke? You going to Jackson 15 minutes? You don't tell Sinead, do you? Are you?" There's a lot of positives to this. The world is crazy. Trump spends his last day in office, a presidency that has really done nothing but symbolized Metcalfe's law. a 1980s theory that suggested that once we all began to use the same mechanism, it would slowly begin to control us. One fax machine is powerless. Two fax machines means there's communication between those fax machines. 1,000 fax machines and we've problems. And the internet did exactly that. It doesn't actually exist. It's not real. One phone on Twitter, one phone on Instagram, you're not doing anything. At a second, at a third, at a fourth. Then it becomes the world. And Trump's presidency is literally like it didn't occur. It did not occur. It occurred on a phone. It occurred on Twitter. And I don't think the change in him leaving is going to be as drastic as people think, because the sensationalism of politics has been completely blown out of proportion due to the way we consume it, not really what's happening in it. So whatever happens after his presidency, in which he should slip off into fucking irrelevance and we're glad he's gone, will be equally as wild as what happened during the presidency. And then the allegations of Biden not being mentally there or up to it will all begin, and we will share them, and we will send them to each other, and we will talk about them, and we will realize that the world has actually just fucking completely gone mental. Just look at the coronavirus for an example to explain that. The ability to scaremonger, the ability to judge each other's lives. Now, yes, we need to look after each other. We need to make sure that this thing isn't getting out of hand at a consistent level and do your bit. But the nosiness and the intrusion and the willingness of us to sell our privacy has led to this thing literally giving people the ability to control our lives and make sure we can't go certain distances and stay indoors. And this is only the beginning. These lockdowns are a warm-up, I believe, because in 10 years, when they start hammering home the dangers of global warming, they will expect us to engage in monthly lockdowns and they will develop theories about how that will stop the speed of climate change. And we will get used to notions such as locking down, because people are becoming used to it. It's becoming life. It's 10 months. 10 months is a huge period of time. We think we are free. We think we have more independence than people of days gone by. And we think about how tough it must have been for people in the World War II days or in the Cold War. No. Now is the time where we have nothing. Nothing but a tablet that is telling us what to do. It tells you what to do. We're aware of that, are we? We're aware that when we hold that thing, even watching a YouTube video that's recommended to you or anything like that, it's telling us what to do. And my manners, I forgot to introduce Tomas.
How you doing?
What do you mean, how am I doing?
How are you doing?
We're talking to a guy here who has, for over a year now, expressed a huge interest in coming on air. Making his mark on the Michael Anthony Show, something I don't know if you're capable of. The only thing I've seen to do that showed me in any way that you are capable of this is the time in which we were getting a ferry back from Holyhead after a trip to United v Leicester in Mourinho's early days. One thing that stands out for me in that game is, although we beat them 4-1, the Leicester fans serenaded self-deprecatively as champions of England to United.
League One! You'll never win League One. You'll never win League One.
And as they were singing that whilst they were Premier League holders, the club made a little indent in my heart. But the point I'm making here is, on the way back, we missed the train to get the boat. The woman, the quite kind elderly woman who worked behind the desk, informed us that we were late and that we would have to pay £100 for a new ticket. You had a huge problem with it. I saw you getting animated. Because you're a hungry guy. You could be the first to say that you're starving. You're the type of guy who spends too long at the ATM. You know when you're behind someone at the ATM and they're there for around 6 minutes?
Yeah.
The debate within their head is so strong that they don't know what to do. So sometimes I question why they ever went to the ATM in the first place. It takes 40 seconds to use an ATM. You slip a card and you type in your digits, you press what you want and you leave.
Yeah.
Why are they there for 10 minutes? Hungry fuckers like you is why.
Yeah.
I saw you getting animated and then out of the corner of my eye, and you didn't know I was looking, I saw you slip off. I thought you were going to the bathroom. You returned 6 minutes later and you had a small baggie of 100 £1 coins to pay for your new ticket in.
Yeah.
I thought there was character to that. Why did you do that day?
I thought she was ridiculous not letting us.
What do you mean?
Well, we were 2 minutes late.
So? It doesn't matter if you're 2 minutes late. You're late. So the woman working behind the counter, who possibly has children at home, if not grandchildren, living elsewhere,
mm.
is not allowed to do her job by charging you for a ticket because you've absolutely no respect for transport punctuality.
Yeah.
So you then go and mock her in front of people by giving her £101 coin. She has to charge you for the new ticket.
Yeah.
On the system, your ticket was on the previous train. You missed it. Why wouldn't you pay for a new one?
I did pay for it.
Do you think you're better than her?
No, but I thought if she wanted the money so bad, I'll give her the money.
She wanted the money. The company wanted the money. She's an employee.
Yeah.
If she was giving free tickets for new trains because people weren't showing up on time, she'd be investigated by her superiors.
I think she could let it slip.
Why would she?
2 minutes.
Why would she take the risk because you're an obnoxious guy in your early 20s who can't deal with consequences for his actions?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's fair enough, yeah.
How did you get the £101?
I went to the ATM and took out the 100 quid and I went to the coin machine. Yeah, looking back, it's probably wrong.
What's with that Barnett?
Barnett.
Is it the Martin Cahill tribute or what is it?
It's medication, Barnett.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Because although I can see, obviously, it's thin. It's coming out like a scarecrow. There's a degree of artificiality to it.
Mm.
It's not transplanted. It isn't AstroTurf.
No.
It's not Glenn Murray.
No.
There's something about it that ain't genuine. What do you mean it's a medication, Barnett?
It's a cholfenasteroid.
Known for side effects such as loss of libido, inability to ejaculate, tiredness, dizziness, breast pain. Why would you take something that carries so many risks in order to Rudy Giuliani bits of your Barnett?
Probably out of an insecurity and what have had.
No, I get that. So you can come on here, you can play the violin and tell the sob story. Yeah. There's a difference between being self-deprecative and just ruining people's day.
Yeah. I had something happen to me that made me reevaluate my hair.
What do you mean had something happen to you?
I was about 9 months ago down the country with a couple of friends and probably at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I went outside to get a cigarette, to have a cigarette. I realized I had no lighter on me. And I saw two girls across the road from me. Went
you're
over.
Boring to, dude, you know.
Yeah. Went over to them to ask for a lighter.
Yeah.
And started attempting to, I think, maybe at the time, flirt with them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where's this going, pal?
Then after 90 seconds, probably a flirt with them, I looked at one of them.
Yeah.
And realised they're both probably 11 years of age, probably.
Okay. So hold on a second. You come out of the bar, you're in a country area where boy racing is most likely prominent. Probably hosts an Irish college or two, the village you were in. These would be known as the locals, the girls you're talking about. Back when I went, what county were you in?
Waterford.
Yeah. So I actually went to Irish College in Waterford, and there used to be a game in which you would calculate who could meet the most young women, i.e. kiss, on the final day. And when the rankings were totted up, there was always one guy, and he knows who he is, who would, as opposed to just keeping his numbers in-house, he would kiss the villagers. AKA the locals. And they were young women, highlighted hair, and they were smoking at obscene young ages. So it sounds like you stumbled across a local, but it's very rare to have this experience in your mid-20s with a local.
Yeah.
So you go across, you're a bit drunk, and you're thinking, I could get a lighter elsewhere, but there's two girls over there. They look like they're smoking. I'm going to start the conversation, going to ask for a lighter.
Yeah, they were smoking.
You light your cigarette, you look up, and you realize they're 11.
They're 11, yeah.
Okay. How did that feel?
Terrible. I quickly kind of realised that.
Yeah.
I was probably could be arrested.
How do you associate it to the Barnett?
Because I went back inside.
You said yourself, the male pattern baldness I'm experiencing here is knocking my confidence so much that I'm getting drunk and I'm making really desperate decisions under alcohol. And I've just ended up chatting up two 11-year-olds.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so made the decision to contact BlackRock Hair Restoration Clinic the next day.
And they said to you?
Yeah, there's an issue here. I saw Ashton Kutcher on Conan O'Brien.
Right.
And he was talking about it.
He was talking about how he used the pills to grow his Barnett back.
Yeah, so it kind of made me think, I could do that.
So in order to get away from being romantically associated with minors, why not be the guy from that 70s show and punked?
Yeah.
Who's known for his looks.
Yeah.
And doesn't resemble Peter Crouch. Okay. It's interesting. It's an interesting start. It's an interesting way to introduce yourself.
Mm.
You've gone quite dark quite early, but I appreciate your approach. I do appreciate your approach. You're a strange dude, you know that, yeah?
Yeah.
I don't know if we'll see you on air again, but thanks for that. Something I am keen to touch on today is football. Manchester United. A lot of listeners to this show are expressing their want for my opinion on it, as if in some way they think I've been proven wrong. Let me just begin by saying I wish I was proven wrong. If Manchester United were in a title race, my life would be considerably better. It affects my mood to an irrational level, a life-altering level. So I really, really do wish that I was wrong. But these people who cite league positions and cite the fact that Solskjaer seems to have steadied the ship, so to speak, completely ignore context. Manchester United have 37 league points. We have yet to go to Stamford Bridge. We have yet to go to Arsenal. Two places in which we've remarkably poor records in, post-Fergie. We've yet to go to Wolves, where we haven't won a league game since they got promoted. We're yet to go to Tottenham, a team that beat us 6-1 earlier on in the season. I have United getting 32 more league points in the remaining 20 games. And that's a completely fair estimate. I went down through the fixtures. I asked myself what we're going to get in these games. And I came to 32 more points, which will leave us with a total of 69. I have Man City, who have much nicer fixtures and are hitting form, finishing with 87. There's 18 league games gone. People are citing the date. They're saying we haven't been in this league position after the new year since Fergie left. This late into January since Fergie left. By this date, the 20th of January, the early 20s of January, teams are normally playing their 24th league game. We're actually in November. It's a COVID season, and that's not even me citing the lack of crowd at games, which test players' character, something that we hugely lack in our squad. I'm just talking about actual games played. So if it was a real season and we were in this league position after those games played, we wouldn't even be talking about it. We've 6 more points than David Moyes' United after 18 games. We've 2 more than Louis van Gaal's first season. We've 4 less than Mourinho's second season. If you even look at the games we've played, West Brom at home, they didn't get a penalty they should have got. We got one for no reason. 3 points we shouldn't have. Villa at home, I don't think that's a penalty on Pogba. 2 points we shouldn't have. Brighton away, when the penalty was given the next day, 2 points we shouldn't have. Now, it's not some conspiracy theory. I'm not claiming that they're in it to make sure United remain relevant for viewing figures. But it's luck. It's coincidence. And we have got completely lucky in the games we've played. We are out of the Champions League in a group stage in which Leipzig finished ahead of us, a team that was founded in 2009. Bertie Ahern had been and gone by 2009. Wayne Rooney had less hair than he has now. Kings of Leon had already sold out. And the Irish show, The Clinic, was wrapping things up. We're out of the League Cup. And with the FA Cup fixture been shocking, we might just go out of that too. People cite that Solskjaer gets to semi-finals. What I see is a guy who now has managed Manchester United in 7 knockout competitions and he's yet to get to a final. Mourinho got to 3 in his first 6 knockout competitions. Where is the improvement? This guy has a better squad than any manager post-Ferguson, comfortably. Let's not forget that when Louis van Gaal went out of the Champions League group stage in the 15-16 season, which was such big news because we still had Manchester United standards, Varela was playing. Matteo Darmian was playing. Nick Powell came on. Paddy McNair was on the bench. We've the highest wage bill in the Premier League. We've a good squad. And we have had beautiful fixtures. Nothing has changed. This season is going worse than I feared in many ways. I thought we might be able to scag out one of the cup competitions. We're not in a title race. It's extremely tight there. So anyone who is going around as a Manchester United fan thinking that we are back in some way, shape or form, you're letting yourself and the club down because you are playing a role in accepting these lowered standards that are the result of negligence by not only the board but an inept management team. And you're also slightly behaving like Liverpool fans in the era in which they were subject to gross underachievement, in which they made outrageous claims and had the ability to overrate their players because they had a cult group of supporters who had the voice to do so. And we also have that voice. But I thought we'd be mature enough and have the dignity not to do it. Bruno Fernandes, top, top player. But some of the comments about him are outrageous. He's very, very good. He's statistically fortunate due to the fact that we get an obscene number of penalties. And a lot of them, many of them, shouldn't have been given. He goes in and out of games and has flashes of complete genius. But he's in and out of games. And it reminds me a little bit of Fernando Torres's, the Michael Owens, and players who were relatively inconsistent that were completely blown up by a dominant fan base of an underachieving team. For example, if Harry Kane or Sergio Aguero played for Manchester United or Liverpool, I don't even know what we'd say about them. If Thierry Henry, even though his reputation is so large and he is considered by almost everyone to be top five Premier League players ever, if he did it in Anfield, I don't think there'd be a debate. I don't think they'd allow one. I don't think the media would, because the media play up to United and Liverpool fans as well, because they know that we are the biggest consumers of their information and we play the largest role in spreading interest in the sport. Our points tally's low. This isn't going to be 1997 in which you can win the league on 75 points, or 98 when you can win it on 78. The treble season, 79, 2011, 80. That's not it. City are going to kick into gear. Liverpool will possibly get better. Tottenham aren't completely out of it yet. I don't buy into the Leicester thing fully, but they're getting results. We're not in a title race, guys. We play badly every week and scrape results we don't deserve. Performances are everything, and they will catch up with you. We will get the points total we deserve. And if you're actually having images in any way, shape, or form of us holding the Premier League trophy, of Victor Lindelof having that in his hand and handing it to Harry Maguire, you're just making it up, and lockdown is getting to you. Solskjaer needs to go. He is not capable of bringing us to where we should be. And we've cleaned up the squad. We've got some extremely exciting players. And if we had the right management team, I think then we could probably now be in a position to win the Football League once again. But the other teams aren't going to stay in this level of transition forever. If he'd gone last year when I demanded he did numerous times on this show, I think we actually could win the league this season. If we had acted and begged Allegri to come in, I think we'd be in pole position now. It's an incredibly weak league. Arsenal, one of the biggest clubs in the country, are managed by Mikel Arteta. Chelsea, at least for now, are managed by Frank Lampard. Tottenham's squad team, when you actually look at it, it's underwhelming. City have had their problems. Liverpool are missing the best player in the league. He's out. They've won 9 of 18 league games due to him, not just because he's missed on the pitch, but the effect of that, the effect of losing a guy who took you from a team who constantly fell short, a club, a city, and making you consistent, winning the European Cup and then league. The impact of him no longer playing, it means you're not winning the trophies this year. I think Leipzig turned them over. And if they do, with Potchman taken, with Allegri seemingly refused to step foot in Great Britain, although he's 32 years of age, I'd look at Nagelsmann. I'd look at him. I know I said Pochettino was somebody I'd take and like to come in. A lot of that was also motivated by the fact that anyone but Solskjaer, and if Poch did come in again, it would be such an improvement on our current setup, but he would have an inferiority off the bat with the Mourinhos, with the Klopps, with the Guardiolas. Nagelsmann comes in, he's pure, he's clean, he's straight out of the womb. He doesn't care. Their performance against us in Germany was terrifying. The final score was 3-2, but one of our goals was a handball. The other one shouldn't have counted either. They tore us apart. He knew what he was doing. And the saddest thing of all of this is, due to luck in many games so far this season in the league, there could be a possibility in which we do finish third or fourth again, which secures Solskjaer even longer, and the nightmare continues. And we're stuck like this. And people are pointing fingers at people saying, how can't you be happy? We're living in an illusion which we're top of the league. Why don't you just go with it? Because it's not sustainable long term. It's a complete waste of time. It's more of an intense love of the club as opposed to anything else. A lot of these guys rely on the narrative that if you can't be happy when United are top of the league, maybe you need to look at your love of the club. No, 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 it's the opposite. It's devout. It's extremism. It's borderline terrorism. And guys who have the ability to look at the club from a long-term perspective are the Reds I want to be around. Are the Reds I want to sit in the Stretford End with. If we saw it in the performances, we'd be singing United top of the league with you, but it's not in the performances. So spare us the bullshit. Nothing has changed. United haven't progressed. Obviously, we're going to get results the odd time when we have one of the most impressive squads in the league. It's going to happen. Anyone would get the odd result. And let's just sail across the Atlantic quite briefly. Because, as you may be aware, we're getting to the tail end of the National Football League season. Thomas, you freak. You're somebody who has claimed to possess a knowledge of American football. Somebody who takes pride in it. I've never bought it. I might buy it a bit more if whatever you say in the next few minutes turns out to be true. We have, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, we've had segments in the past where the mute, irrelevant kind of co-host character states what he believes will happen in the following weekend sporting events, and the listeners tend to place a wager. And if you're right, you will get praised, and if you're wrong, they will come at you, and they will not hold back. We're looking at the Bills, we're looking at the Chiefs, and we're looking at the Packers against the Bucks. What are you looking at in both games?
I'll be going Bills to beat the Chiefs, 13-10.
So you're just deliberately going for the outsider in order to protect yourself, because if you win, it's ridiculous.
No,
and if you lose, yeah, you took a punt on the outsider.
No, I think Mahomes.
You're avoiding handicaps, you're avoiding over-unders, you're just going flat for the Bills.
Yeah, I think you're getting a
great price. But it looks to me like you're trying to cover yourself.
No, getting the value, 13-10.
You think it will actually happen?
I've 100%, yeah.
Why?
Because I think Mahomes is banged up from last week. You wouldn't get the Bills at 13-10 with Mahomes. Mahomes mightn't even be playing.
But he will be playing.
He might, yeah, but after.
We're talking about the NFL.
Yeah,
they have films on how they force people who have received recent concussions to play. There's too much money in it. He's playing. You think that the concussion's still going to exist either or, and he's not going to be himself and the Bills will win?
Yeah, and you're getting the value of 13-10.
What are we looking at in the Bucks Packers?
Tom Brady.
Yeah, see, there's a few reasons why I don't like that. Number one, Brady scores his kids, male kids at that. Number two, I'm really against this whole idea of 80-year-old athletes still performing at peak level. I look at Zlatan, I look at Ronaldo, LeBron James, Tom Brady. They're so into sports science that they may as well be in a Petri dish. Lionel Messi, somebody who I've often cited as the greatest athlete of all time, is aging like a normal human being. He's relatable. He's losing yard. He's not as consistent. These guys are getting Botox and they're elongating their commercial value. And I really think for the sake of sport, as an old school romanticist, it would be terrible for all of us if Brady wins the Super Bowl. Not just that, also because the team he plays for, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, are owned by the Glazers, who have shattered many of my dreams, really, as a family and as a business cult. And if they go on to win the Super Bowl, they will value themselves even higher than they already do as sports teams owners, which will lead to more arrogance and more belief in their decision making, which means that Manchester United will suffer. So that would be absolutely terrible if it happens. And I also disagree with you. I don't think Aaron Rodgers loses. I think he looks too hot. He looks too good. And I just think it's an immature selection to say the Bucks win. What are you basing it on? Or are you just fucking over the listeners? Who, by the way, you don't know.
No.
You don't have the right to fuck them over.
No, the Bills isn't an outsider to me. I think that one's scary that you put
so
that
one. So you're saying you don't really
that's
think the
guaranteed.
Bucks are winning?
No, obviously that's more difficult because they have to go to Lambeau Field. So it's, the Bills is in.
I don't know if we'll see you again, Tomo, to be honest with you. If the Bills do win, we might have a chat. I appreciate you tuning in. We have some big guests coming up, MA Sean.
It's been how many years, my boy?
Audio books, David.
Sure, you still don't know my chairs of joy. No need to go, just take
Radio
it
cast.
Slow.
Podcast.
And have you heard the Michael Anthony Show?
Makes me feel just fine.
What's it
say? Makes me see the light.
What about those cheers?
Cheers, believe my eyes.
How's it make you feel?
Makes me